Namaste, welcome to this. Well, it's really the end of December update. We have mostly December's homework. We have, I think, one that's come from January's subject matter already. So before I continue, I want to just let you know of a change to the way that we're going to be dealing with the homework. In order to make it easier for us to organise what's coming in, because there's more of it that's coming, which is great. We're going to be putting a cutoff point of Sunday midnight UK time for homework. So any homework that comes in before midnight UK time on a Sunday will be in with this week's whole set. And any that comes in after that will be included in the week after the will be put into the next week, just so that we have time to sort through and organise and make sure we don't miss anyone's homework. Currently, as the numbers are, I can just about read everyone's homework every week. So, and that will be the same until the next course. So after this month, January and February, the course runs again next month. I would encourage everyone to join in this graduate program to be on that course again. The graduate program, as I said before, is not a replacement for, but an addition to help you understand the course. And that means we need to be involved in the course. I'm deeply learning each time still, and I hope you are open to it too. So sign up for the course in February. You don't have to pay anything extra, but you really could do with being involved. Each time you take it, you'll see you get it deeper and deeper. And in March, there will be a new influx of people from to the graduate program from the course, more than likely. And at that point, it's very likely that I won't be able to read everyone's homework out. I might have to start picking and choosing or just selecting at random what from the homework that comes in. So make the most of this time while you have it. Submit some homework if you want to, and hopefully you're seeing it really helps everyone. Everyone's homework helps everyone. Every answer, every comment I give helps everyone too. And there's not really any such thing as a teacher, just one person on their own. It's a whole thing happening, isn't it? So let's get started. We've got 12 today, so we'll do them in two batches. Okay. So the first one says, I have been contemplating how far do I reach? I wonder if this question has intensified an already occurring experience. I can feel that when I ask this question, the non-reality of the appearance and the expansiveness that I am. I can feel that when I ask this question, the non-reality of the appearance and the expansiveness that I am. So the appearance is that I'm this separate being living in this world of other beings, other things. The non-reality of that becomes more obvious with this question, and the expansiveness of my everywhereness becomes clearer. I can feel the limitation that I have put on myself, and it seems to lift this limited sense of self. I have been focusing on the noumenon and inquiring into what this means. I feel life is becoming a meditation. Beautiful, beautiful. Everything is losing its realness, even my emotional responses. So they're just more and more things happening inside you, aren't they? Anything can happen in the world, in your world, in your mind, in your body, in your emotions. And it's gently just noticed in this quiet expansiveness of your real being. And it does become a meditation. Rather than meditation being something we're doing, it expands more into being something that we just are. Meditation is a way of being, isn't it? Noticing the noumenon more and more. And it's more and more automatic, it's breaking through and you're recognizing that. I have been having this experience of the background of awareness seeming to move to the forefront of my awareness over the past year. It first started as an evening thing around 6 to 7 p.m. Then it started happening at random times of the day as well, in the morning, in my office at work, or while waiting for an appointment. These experiences of self moving to the forefront were spontaneous. Then recently, there was the interruption of thought. This would disrupt the reflexive patterns of anxiety, guilt, or anger thoughts. For example, when I wake up at night, I usually have a horrible time going back to sleep. I may be up for 2 to 3 hours because my mind is so active, usually with anxiety-provoking thoughts. I have begun feeling this energy in my head. It completely wipes out all the thought. I cannot think a thought if I want to in this state. Very good. It allows me to be calm and to go back to sleep. It is what I feel when tuning into the noumenon, only it is spontaneous and automatic. But this bulletproof thought shield is new. I love that bulletproof thought shield is new. It is calming and welcome and happening more often. I become intensely present in these moments. So just want to stop there and say this is identity shifting, isn't it? This is you knowing deeper and deeper that you are the noumenon, looking at what's happening inside you, arising inside you, all of this, rather than some phenomena trying to get back to the great space of your being. This is the direct result of that, where you begin to experience that it's a choice whether to think or not. And sometimes it's just too much effort to think. Mind even doesn't want to energize itself in that place, does it? And even if it is talking, it doesn't really matter. It really doesn't matter at all. Usually, though, there are these moments where there's just an intense aliveness. And that will become, you said present and very present, and that's going to become your normal. So this is what's always been here, always been available, but now attention is going to it habitually, effortlessly, spontaneously, because that's the fruit of lesson three, shifting identity, beginning to recognize I am that first and foremost in which all of this is occurring. And that all of this that's occurring, whether that be external noise or internal, is more and more just something that's going on with less and less meaning given to it. Wonderful. There's always the evidence this of identity shifting deeply into, but for me, there's just this constant kind of real present moment awareness type of thing where awareness is equally undisturbed by anything that arises in it. It's just, I'm just aware, and things might be popping, you know, up and down inside, but more and more attention is effortlessly and continuously for you going to that awareness, to the noumenon, whatever we're calling it, rather than it having to be a tuning in. So it moves from something I'm doing to something I'm being. And then it's just effortless and continuous eventually. You'll just notice it's been a very long time since you were able to kind of suffer or be, you know, and sort of really put attention on any particular thoughts or energized thoughts. They might be going on, but there's just very little interest in them. And it is a choice to think. It always has been, but now it becomes clear that it is a choice of where I'm putting my attention. What I'm identifying as is the key, isn't it? So this is how we know identity is shifting. It's important to notice this. And there might be some very strong, blissful, quiet, intense silences that kind of come in the body to match that. It's very common people are awake during the night with this kind of thing. It was the same for me as well. I used to dread it, used to hate it, be tired all the next day. And then I began to really enjoy going to bed because I knew I was going to wake up with these kind of anxious thoughts. And then if I just relax, it gave way to this kind of intensity of silence, this enormous mountain of peace that I just didn't care about going back to sleep. And of course I fell asleep again in that quietness. The body just totally let go. But it becomes more and more just your normal state all the time. It is the natural state. Okay. I'm feeling the choice to focus on the noumenon becoming more available, higher choices becoming available. And when I do make the choice to do this, I feel I cannot be overcome by triggers. I cannot crucify myself the way I have in the past. I, of course, keep questioning if this is real. It is like nothing I've ever experienced, and it does not seem to be going anywhere after 2 to 3 weeks. Because it's not an experience, is it? More and more what's always been there, but in the background is becoming in the foreground. It's not moving. It's just your attention is moving less and less towards the phenomena and more just resting and staying in that which is beautiful and still and silent. Chapter 13 of Now That You Are Formless states, every thought, feeling, and opinion is us. Perhaps all this is merging back into this one, not being separate. If all is arising inside of me, then in its truest form, can it be experienced as separate or experienced at all? And perhaps this is what I am experiencing above, just asking for feedback. Yeah. When you know that everything that's appearing to be is just an appearance, the way that you are appearing, whether that's as a thought, as intense silence, as a negative emotion, as some peace, everything from the good and the bad and the ugly, when it's just a way that you are appearing, there's really very little fascination going to it, isn't there? There is just happening, and there might be some watching if it's quite turbulent, but it's not given any meaning. It's not given any, okay, you need to stop. It needs to go away. There's just that which is watching, which is what the noumenon is, and the way it's arising, which is also what the noumenon is. But they're not seen as two, are they? How can the waves be separate to the ocean? Is there really such a thing as a wave, or is it just a shape the ocean's taking? There's a wave and there's the ocean, and I don't care which one really I identify as. And that naturally sort of settles you back into that bulletproof place when you experience it. Very, very good. Very good. Just invite that. Just welcome it. Just enjoy it. And it'll just become continuous. Just notice where you're experiencing other way, and see if you can open up and invite, open up and invite, open up and invite, and it just become, before you know it, it'll be continuous, and nothing can disturb that, ever. Nothing ever has, but attention will stop doing this ping-ponging back and forth. Or perhaps clearer said, it won't matter where attention is at all, whether it's looking at thoughts or looking at the source of thoughts, you'll feel the same. Wonderful, wonderful. Keep going. Next one says, hi, Helen. I was really pleased when I watched the lesson, and I'm looking forward to working on the lesson and the contemplations. After listening, I had a thought that maybe I had been believing in cause and effect, and would like to ask if that was what I had done. Before Christmas, I was feeling off-kilter, worthless, and unlovable. So I worked on some statements looking at these feelings, and I felt better in myself. It was a lovely Christmas full of love and friendship, which I put down to doing the statement process and letting things go. Is this me believing in cause and effect? Thank you. So this is from January's homework. So if I'm believing that I'm really unlovable, really sort of unworthy, really not who I'm supposed to be, then that's got to reflect around me, because the reflection is the same one. There aren't two things. You can't have a reflection in a mirror without the image causing the reflection. There's got to be, it's one and whole. You can't have a reflection without anything there in front of the mirror. They're the same one. The image, you, what you think and feel about yourself, and the reflection, your body, your mind, your world, your emotions, your relationships. And the more that I question this and really want to see what I really am, the more that's got to reflect my outer world of love and friendships. The coming back to me, what I'm more certain about in myself, I am the essence of love, that I could never be unworthy. I never have been, never been unlovable. As the source of love, I don't know how to reject anything, least of all myself. How can I reject anyone or anything as a source of love? And that has to reflect back, doesn't it? As everyone else agreeing, yes, you are lovable. Yes, you are worthy. Yes, you are good enough. Yes, you are who you're supposed to be right now. You're authentically enough in this moment. Wonderful. You'll just begin to notice clearer and clearer where some belief has crept up, crept in, and it's given some validity, and that begins to reflect. The moment the reflection changes to something you don't want or like, you can immediately, okay, what's this showing me I'm believing in? and going inside rather than trying to fix the outside first. Let the outside change as a reflection of what you're seeing inside to be true about yourself. You only ever are that perfection. That's all I can see for all of you, always. Let's try not to be so hard on ourselves, as Jess Glynn says. Okay, lovely. Next one. So week 4, so this is December. This week I contemplated the focus of this lesson. Why do we still feel limited or separate even when we have seen that we are formless? In lesson 1, we learn to focus on the noumenon, and we must begin to question what this means for us. We can inquire into the silence and stillness consciousness and begin to understand what it means to be formless. What does it mean to be the noumenon? These answers arose. I am formless, neither here nor there, no borders, no boundaries, no thing to manifest. All form is transmuted within me. It is here and yet not here. So that's kind of the appearance, isn't it? Form will always appear to be here, but it's not independent and real, as in separate to, cannot exist outside the formlessness. It's a shape the formlessness is taking. So here is a word that can denote physicality. What does here mean? Here is confinement. Now is too. Even these, which seem elemental, they are not. They contain everything. How can they be here and now if they are everything? How can I be here and now too? My experience is just a mode of expression in everything, a conduit for this place and time. But a conduit is just a connection, so that implies a separation, something to be connected, two separate somethings. So that's good you're seeing that. This very subtle division, isn't it? Very subtle, very subtle. A thing, a something, but it is no thing. It can be broken down more and more, division, to get to the core. Core, but core implies something outside itself. So it is neither or both, the knot of energy with exponential potential or the endless expansion. It can only be pondered, marveled at. It cannot be known by me. So there is a beautiful mystery that is you that you can't really ever get to grips with. It can appear as all of this, and yet it is none of this, is it? It's kind of inclusive of the allness of it, and yet it's not ever divided by any of it. It's not the sum of its parts. It's whole, homogeneous, unique, unified, not separatable or divisible. Okay, so upon rereading the above, I'm uncomfortable because it is a different take on here and now. In hindsight, it seems incorrect. I do want to get it right, in speech marks, but I will share anyway. Words are just symbols, and to rework would be of ego. So that's really good. You can share without anyone judging you here at all, the expanding understanding that comes from sitting with this question. And when you first sit with questions, you're going to get these kind of more limited answers. They're not wrong at all. It's beautiful that you've seen there might be more to see and you've continued to question. And I'm really glad you kept that in because it's authentic. And everyone gets limited answers to a question before they move to more unlimited answers. So the next answer that arose after watching the Awakening Together satsang on being this moment, practicing this is really powerful. In the past few days, strong and fleeting feelings have arisen about finances, my daughter's health, a friend with cancer, possibly coming out of retirement to work. Previously, these would all trigger a twinge of suffering and attempts to push from my consciousness. Yesterday and this morning, as these arose, I didn't resist them. I saw that they are me. I am this moment, and this is part of this moment. I am not separate from them. This is so good, isn't it? So these things arise, and normally we would push them away, which is immediately trying to divide and push away. And as I see that I am this moment, I've naturally got to begin to include everything arising in this moment, appearing to arise in this moment, not actually arising. It's got to include more, hasn't it? What is arising and appearing inside me, inside this moment, which is me, is also me. And the more I recognize it is me also, and not different to the formlessness, the less I'm going to want to reject anything at all, aren't I? I'm going to have a harder and harder time rejecting anything, pushing against, and then I'll be at peace no matter what. So, separation is resistance, pushing away, pushing down. So I literally separate myself by trying to get rid of this. I literally try to somehow separate the inseparable me. That's why it hurts so much. That's why we suffer. Separation is resistance, pushing away, pushing down, trying to escape. This is not realistic. These are part of the moment that is me. They cannot be destroyed. Instead, I felt them patiently without the goal of shooing them away. I allowed them to be. This technique places my identity with the noumenon. From there, as I look upon the emotional phenomena, I need do nothing but allow it. Even that, you can't really not allow it there, can you? But I know what you mean. The moment you stop pushing, the moment you stop is the moment you stop pushing or grabbing is the ego, isn't it? And less of this, more of this. The moment you stop that, you automatically step into being the noumenon consciously, which is inclusive of all of this. Okay. The allowing of love is this, of this expression of me without judgment. The allowing is love of this expression of me without judgment. I'll put my teeth back in. The effect is that it neutralizes the charge. The facts, the emotions are unchanged, but this shifts me to seeing my identity as the noumenon, as whole, inclusive of everything in this moment. Well, we were just talking about this in Satsang, weren't we? So wonderful. So it's up to us whether we're being ego or noumenon in any moment. And it's always a choice. I can step into that inclusive wholeness of being this moment, everything that's arising, being the silence, and all the sounds that are arising out of it, being the stillness and the movement happening inside it. Or I can be someone, the movement, I can be the sound, I can be the noise, trying to get back to peace. It never works. So two answers to what it means to focus on the noumenon, one seemingly cosmic and one personal. In the past, I would try to patch them together. See, that's from the idea that they're two, isn't it? And you're seeing that they're not really, they're just different ways to experience yourself. How wonderful. But I'm seeing that isn't necessary. They are merely aspects of the whole. It is amazing to realize the value of this sharing with you, with my fellow students. It comes from the heart, inchoate at times, but genuine expressions of self nonetheless. I learned a new word, inchoate, today, so thank you. But genuine expressions of self nonetheless. It's such good fortune to join with everyone in this creative endeavor. Thank you, dear Helen. Namaste. Isn't it beautiful that we can all benefit from your realizations and your honesty and your openness, and that you'll benefit from everyone else's in this bringing together of, and it's exactly what we do in Satsang, isn't it? But it's a more structured way, looking at a certain aspect that I'm pointing to, questions that are going to lead to some very, very ripe fruit, some very ripe seeing. Wonderful, wonderful. Keep going, go deeper. Excellent. Next one. Hi, Helen, here's my feedback for my homework this week. As you suggested in my previous homework, I've stayed with the question, what am I really? On the odd occasion, I've also contemplated, I am totally, utterly alone. What I've noticed on the whole, as I stay with the question, is that it allows me to keep in a state of openness and curiosity. I find when things are shown to me in the world, I can challenge any beliefs that I may hold about the situation that has just happened. There's also less and less suffering when I challenge these beliefs, as there's a willingness to look at the situation in a different way than I used to. I think when I first asked this question, I was expecting to see some big spiritual insight and was ignoring the answers which were being revealed to me, as perhaps they were too ordinary. So this is very, very common. I'm looking for some huge aha moment out of my questioning, and I might not be noticing or valuing perhaps so much the quiet okayness that's building in the background, the quiet knowing that everything's really okay, the quiet knowing that anything can happen and I can watch it from here. That is so fundamental. That is right where we started with this homework, the identity shifting, isn't it? Becoming consciously living as the noumenon more and more. And you probably see this open, the questioning and the openness has been the theme throughout all these homeworks so far. And when I question, I feel open, I feel light, I feel peaceful. No matter what's happening in ego, I can still feel that way. When I close up around a thought or a belief, I suffer. So all of these contemplations that I'm giving, these questions and all this work, is really just to get you to form the habit of being open. Open, open, open. That's all I ever did until it was habitual and effortless and constant. And you're starting to experience that now, which is wonderful. I can still see some beliefs in place, but that doesn't mean I'm failing or succeeding in the self-inquiry. It just means I need to look a little deeper into the belief. Does that make sense? It would be great to hear your comments on this. Absolutely. There's no end point. There's always a diving deeper into something. Right now, on my hand, you probably won't be able to see, I've got some really dry skin and some eczema, which I haven't had in a good few years. And before, when it used to come, it would be really sore and weeping, and it would take a long time. I'd have to go to the doctor to heal it, get some stuff to put on it, and all of that stuff. Now my body's showing me, look, still there's something else to look at here. It's reflecting something back to me. But because I'm habitually open to look at it, it just arises as a slight momentary irritation, something to look at. It's immediately embraced into that openness. It's not seen as evidence of my failure. It's just, here's my body helping me, giving me more to look at. It's exactly what you're saying here. There's still some beliefs in place. It doesn't mean I'm failing or succeeding in this self-inquiry. It just means that the seeing is ever refining and deepening through the mind and body, isn't it? And that may go on forever, and it will go on forever. And the things that we have that come up to trigger, to spur this investigation, will be less and less extreme or invasive as I'm able to become more automatic in my openness and my looking. If my very nature is looking and seeing, then the more I embrace that, the easier it'll be for me to see what's going on. You know, and I looked at Louise Hay, you know, it's some kind of anger or something, some belief in limitation and unfairness, something like that going on. So I'm just looking at that and noticing it doesn't mean anything. You know, if my body was perfectly healthy, exactly the way I would like it to be, doesn't mean I'm succeeding in my self-inquiry. If my body has got some little things it's telling me that I need to look at, doesn't mean I'm not succeeding. Doesn't mean anything, does it? It just means there's more to see. And when I'm the openness itself, that is beautiful. It doesn't mean anything negative. And that's what you're pointing to here. So it's very, very good. Very good. You know, if we had to wait for the absence of any problems in the mind, body, and the world, and the emotions as evidence of our awakening, it would never happen. Instead, the evidence of our awakening is our constantly open, ever-developing, deepening openness to see, to question, to inquire. All of the things we teach in the core teachings, meditation, the self-inquiry, contemplation, even statement process as well, everything I'm ever asking you to do is to question, to be open, to not just blindly believe. And that's exactly what the graduate program is about. If I can get someone to habitually question, I know they're going to be fine, absolutely fine. And when something comes up to question, it's a joy then rather than, oh my God, this means I'm failing. Wonderful. Next one. Hi, Helen. Thank you for the very generous gift to the world of the beautiful YouTube videos you freely share. Thank you. I love the way they are organized and easy to find selections that are most helpful in any given moment. Thank you for these very direct messages that are continually point to the one. When reading through the January lesson summary, I wondered about irreconcilable differences, the idea in opposing points of view that never get reconciled, or separate wills, or I suppose it comes down to the one desire to be separate. When questioning form and formlessness and the taste of subjectivity devoid of objects, I get a sense of the stillness present. When the eyes are open, there appears to be objects that have height, width, and depth, three dimensions. If in duality, the equal and opposite is always true of an equation, I get that if the mind camped out on one side of an opposite, an opportunity to experience the other side will come along. Yet this month is about questioning the idea of two. If the mind was a library of past beliefs, or our DNA was full of chemical genetic codes, there would indeed be two. I love how myths are so gently exposed in this program. So if you really believe that what you see with your eyes is separate, opposite to what I experience when my eyes are closed and I'm self-inquiring, I'm going to experience it as two, aren't I? I'm going to experience form and formlessness, form, formlessness, form, back and forwards, over and over, in, out, and really cause and effect says if I believe in two, I'll experience two. And if I begin to see they're not really two, an appearance of diversity is not actual diversity. I can take many shapes, but I'm still the same no matter what shape I'm appearing. Just like if you took some clay or some Play-Doh and made it into all these different shapes, it's still Play-Doh, isn't it? You could even color it and make it look different. It's still the same essential thing. So the appearance of multiplicity, diversity, of duality is only an appearance and not actually so. And when you really get that, we stop suffering, don't we? Because we're just as much in love with the appearance of diversity as we are with our deepest moment in self-inquiry. I wondered about the belief that thoughts are buried as subconscious or unconscious beliefs that come to the surface and go back down, with the idea that they will keep doing that until they are over. Yet there seems to be nothing to do in stillness. Is the mind like a caged animal where the door is open and yet the animal stays in because that's what it's used to? It feels safe there. Absolutely. You can see, you can feel kind of ego doing its thing, even though it's been shown something more expansive. It's not really able to kind of go, okay, let me step out of the box, because it, out of the cage in this example, because it's not able to recognize what the self is. The self includes ego. Ego thinks the self is other than ego. So it kind of is scared of it, isn't it? It cannot see, ego cannot see that it's appearing inside the self as part of the self, mind, ego, whatever. So it's not capable of really adapting and adjusting. We all have this kind of fanciful idea that this caged animal comes out and learns to live in the natural habitat again. And it's not really like that. It's just kind of, we stop pushing it and poking it and trying to get it to do something. If it wants to stay in the cage, that's fine, isn't it? The door's open and we're never going to lock it again. Or less and less are we locking it again. And whatever it wants to do in there is absolutely fine. If it feels safe in there, have at it. So, okay. It seems that mind holds form in place as long as it wants it or thinks about it and believes in it. Yeah, really until we get bored of really experiencing something, then we kind of drop it and move on. There seems to be countless shared beliefs around natural laws, i.e. belief in day and night, that we wake up in the morning, think, make choices, etc. Because it's the one being, isn't it, expressing itself as infinite number of forms, then every human being seems to be separate, but really is experiencing the same beliefs, same collective consciousness is really just the one consciousness experiencing itself many different ways. I guess today the mind is looking at all it has learned about dimensions, an endless comparison of compartmentalization of seamless reality, the holes inside where the objects of perception seem to be. And yet I get a sense of their neutrality and momentary reality. So it will always seem, when you open your eyes after a deep, deep recognition of formlessness, it will always seem, even now, as I look at this laptop I'm recording this on, it will always seem that I am looking at forms, a world of forms. They're still there for me right now. It still seems that my body is solid and real. There's still the appearance of other than me. And that's never going to go away while the body's there, because it's a function of sense perception, a function of feeling like I'm experiencing in one place only. But knowing now a deep conviction that that's not actually so. I'm experiencing as the one that wrote this and the one that's answering this seamlessly. As I write this, there seems to be a dissolution and a great interest in lesson one and the doorways that lead to the mystery. Good, good. I welcome anything you have to say around the either or thoughts or divisions. What would seem natural laws naturally arising, they seem to perpetuate attention on the ongoing interest in following the idea of two. Thank you, Helen. A big smiley face. So yeah, it's just really, actually the satsang we did this morning, self includes, ego excludes, really sort of points to the same thing, doesn't it? That there isn't really anything other than habit going on here. Habit to, and the core fundamental habit we're poking at with this month's work and last month's and all the months is in the graduate program, is the core assumption that form and formless are different, are two, are opposites. And that the world I see with my senses, perceive my senses and think about with my mind is different to and separate from the formless, beautiful space of the noumenon. And when we close that gap, we're not trying to mash two things together. We're seeing, it doesn't matter if it looks this way. It doesn't matter if I'm thinking about someone or deep in self-inquiry. That is just two ways the self can experience itself. And they're not different. Two different modes of my being, so to speak. Lovely. Well done. Keep going as well as always. With all of these, keep going deeper. Last but not least for this session. Hi, Helen, and Happy New Year. Thank you very much. Same to you. I was so glad about this month's subject because I really want to see through causality. I guess I'm already coming out of it quickly because all the old patterns are screaming in my face in all possible ways. So that's vital. I want to just commend you there that you're saying here, because all this is screaming in my face, it must mean something's really shifting. You haven't gone into this means I'm failing. Or you might have at some point, but your predominant attitude is that, wow, something must really be happening here, that all this has been given to me all at once in order to transcend. Today and for several days now, nothing seems to work. I'm not enjoying anything and I'm just irritated, frustrated, angry and powerless. The body feels heavy, tired, uncomfortable and like I'm carrying the pain of the whole world. I know a couple of loved ones have been in physical and emotional pain and I feel like I'm taking part of that burden. Is it possible or is it mine only? Probably both, probably a little bit of both there. Mine and those around me, the more open you get. I try to just let the feelings be there and also question and inquire and ask for help. But I feel that nothing is moving. I feel like I don't even know who I am anymore. After all this spiritual work, I feel like there's no point in doing anything spiritual or mundane anymore. Hope you can help me with this. love. So I want to just say it's normal, and it's actually an advanced state of consciousness what you're going through here. This utter nothing I'm doing is working. I'm at a real roadblock here. I don't know what to do. I feel like I've not made any progress at all. I have no clue. Still don't know who I am. I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere. I would, if I were you, and I'd like you to give me some feedback to do this for me and give me some feedback with next week's homework, is to write down those things that you've said here and contemplate each one. So I feel like nothing is moving. I want you to write that statement down on a piece of paper. I want you to read it. I feel like nothing is moving. So ego says, I feel like nothing is moving. I just don't know what to do. I feel like nothing is moving. 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 Nothing is moving. I want you to do this. I want you to read this and keep with the statement until it brings you great joy. I want you to burst right through. There's an utter wisdom of a sage coming through in this one statement. I feel like nothing is moving. I want you to open your heart to it, let it hit you. Fail completely here. Fail to progress here completely. Utterly fail. Let it in. Embrace this statement. Nothing, I feel like nothing is moving. The negative emotions are indicative of how much we're identifying with this as ego, this statement. So what else can this statement mean? Explore it. I feel like I'm taking part of a burden. I feel like there's a burden. Take that one too. Write that one. Do the same. I don't even know who I am anymore. Write that one down. I don't even know who I am anymore. See, that statement, I can't even focus on that. It will send me into spirals of ecstasy. I don't know who I am. Is that a bad thing that you don't know who you are? Let that statement in. Let it in. Is it a bad thing that you don't know who you are? I want you to really embrace these. These are statements that you could find in a Gita or the Sutra in the Vedas or something. This is something you would find in the Upanishads, and you're saying this wisdom. I want you to really grasp what this means. I feel like there's no point in doing anything. There's another one. Write that down. Embrace it. I am so excited to see what comes out of this. And when you I think there's four statements there that I've said that I've picked out of what you've written. I want you to really embrace them. The reason they feel so bad is because you're not embracing them. You're just keeping them at the thought level. What else can they mean? I want you to really open up. What else can this statement mean? There's no point in doing anything. It's a very fatalistic failure type of statement when it comes from mind, isn't it? I don't know who I am anymore. I've just lost all reference point. I feel lost adrift. But when the self says that, I don't know who I am anymore. There's no point in doing anything. Let that one in too. Please let me know how you get on with this. And it would help everyone in this graduate program if you could do this and send some feedback. And guarantee you're not the only person feeling like this. And you're standing in a doorway right now. Standing actually in the doorway. You're not in this room or that room. You're standing right in the doorway. Probably you've got one foot in this room of limitation and one foot on the doorway. I want you to really ask yourself what these statements mean, as if it was a profound mantra that I'd given you to contemplate or something that you've written down here, that you've sent in. Wonderful. and excited to hear the feedback from that. So we'll leave it there for this part one, and we'll come back to part two, the rest in part two. Thank you.